Can you, is there anything we might imagine a little bit more here? The Israelites are saying this.
They think they need something more than God thinks they need.
They think they need something more than God thinks they need. So there's an incoherence there, right? Or at least it's like, what you think I need is not what I need. Right? Am I hearing you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's like a disconnect.
There's anger.
Anger. Yeah. And I love that it's not all told how they were feeling, because we know, right? And we can name it. We can imagine, because we've had these experiences in unique ways in our lives. So probably anger after 70 years.
I think there's a sense that God doesn't really know the pain. You don't understand this kind of pain.
That's right. Right? That one word that strikes me there is hidden.
Yeah.
Like, this is real, and somehow you can't see it. Maybe if you did, you know, you'd do something. But there seems to be a block. The notion of invisibility comes up for me, right? And we hear this in the Psalms a lot, too. Like, where are you? Okay. Invisibility, right? God can't see us. Anything else?
You've taken away my control.
Okay. The C word, you know? Yeah. I have no control. And it's interesting how you just framed that. You've taken away my control, right? Yeah. Somehow, when we have an experience, it's like, well, God's responsible for this, right? Because we go back to the God's all-knowing and God's all-powerful and God's all-loving, so how the hell is this happening? You know, so yeah.
There's a fear there, too.
Fear?
A fear.
Yeah,
yeah.
Say more.
If God isn't all-powerful and all-knowing, then
all right.
Where are we?
All right. So what does that mean, right? If there's fear that maybe my understanding of God or how God works is different than I had understood it. And that's disillusionment, and that's real. And so then what? How do we respond to an understanding or an experience of God that might be shifting or that is expanding in some way? One of the things I have seen and have learned so much about as a spiritual director is people coming into deeper and wider understandings of the reality of God and who God is, letting God be God. Now, that may sound scary in a situation like this, because is God really good? Right. Yeah.
I'm just taken by looking at the two slides and thinking the women at that time were even one more step removed. And so if there were an image there of the women,
uh-huh,
it would be carrying that same burden with three kids hanging on behind the back.
That's right.
And
maybe even and more invisible, right?
Yeah, and more invisible and even less control.
Well, there's a German truth right there.
Absolutely. So within that powerlessness, there are different dimensions and levels of it. Absolutely. Key point. We probably resonate with, you know, even in our society, with all of the good things happening in terms of the understanding of the value of women, there are still situations where we feel that difference, right? Okay, so in the situation the prophet calls, and this is here again what he says, don't you know? Haven't you heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. The Lord will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who wait for the Lord will renew their strength. And then we have those beautiful images of flying, which I will... Becky will address more closely. So, who is the God that in this place, well, two questions here, I'll put them up at the same time. Who is the God that we are invited to remember here, and what do you think about the call to wait here?
Well,
here? Does it seem like a joke? What is it? And feel free to be thinking, you know, kind of have a place in your life, kind of in your mind here, where this might be operating. Any ways you'd like to weigh in here?
It's about trusting.
Okay, trust.
Yeah.
So an invitation to trust.
And remember.
And remember. And say more about that, remembering.
Well, to remember that was a God that brought them out of Israel and was their God.
Okay. So there's already been an experience.
Right. Consistently.
Okay. Yeah. That in this time, the prophet is saying, we need to remember that our how God has been faithful to us in the past.
Even though you don't see it.
Even though you don't see it. And even though that feels really, the word that keeps coming to my mind is absurdity, right?
That's good. That's a good word.
Okay. Remember. Yeah.
I was thinking his understanding no one can fathom to me relates back to that notion of the way being hidden. Like before the explanation was like, there's no other possible explanation except God can't see it. Because obviously if God saw it, God would do something. And this is like, no, you just don't understand God's action ever. And you can't. And sort of like offering that alternative of like, it's not that you're hidden from the Lord. It's just that you can't fathom it.
Like, right.
You can't fathom why this is happening because of something greater.
Yeah. And so I'm thinking like that's almost turned on its head. Mm-hmm. Something about God is hidden to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard, right? Why? I wrestle with this question a lot myself.
I think he wants to get us so low that we have nothing to rely on and no one to rely on but him.
Bam, bam, bam.
Wow.
Okay, let's just pause with that remark. Yeah. Can you say a little bit more there?
I think that I said it in a nutshell. Okay. I've learned that I've just got to trust him and trust him.
So that, how you...
And lean on him for anything that I need, because I have no one else to go to. No one.
So what I'm struck by in that powerful remark is that somehow that leads you to trust, as opposed to, and I'm not saying it's not okay to struggle with this, but leading you to a bitter place. That there's something that you have experienced about God that invites you to trust there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm trying.
We all are.
Yeah.
That's why we're here, and that's why we need one another. That's why we need to come together before God. Okay. Were there other responses? Yeah.
To add, waiting gives you the space to be with him.
Mm-hmm.
In that place.
Stripped you of everything except the...
Yeah.
Okay, so there's something about waiting that creates space, right? Silence. Something opens up there. Something opens up in our waiting, which means something can be created or come up, okay, that wasn't there before. And as Becky said this morning, we don't have to be responsible. We are not responsible for what emerges. We don't have to worry about it. Oops.
A reaction to to that God wants to get us so low.
Go ahead.
Bam, bam, bam.
Yeah.
My reaction to it was God sees that sometimes we are so low, rather than at least I found myself reacting against God wanting us to be so low, but seeing that we are sometimes.
Yeah. And that's a nice thing to hold together. With feeling like, you know what? We have a lot of examples in the scriptures of people feeling like God's beating them down. Take Job, right? And so I think that's partly reflective of a Jewish understanding of God, of a Hebrew understanding of God. But the reality is, sometimes it's not clear what's causing our diminishment?
Trying to fix it ourselves.
Okay. So I just want us to hear that, Melissa, right? Okay. That when we find ourselves in these situations, like, I think the call right now, I mean, we can lose a lot of sleep in our lives by asking, like, did God do this to me? Is God allowing this to happen to me? You know, I mean, and these questions usually take us nowhere pretty fast, in my experience. So, and I'm not saying they're not real questions. They're very real questions. But let's see where God takes us this weekend with those questions. Okay, so one of the authors that I'll be drawing from today is spiritual writer and sister religious Joan Chittister, Benedictine sister. And she's written this wonderful little book, Scarred by Struggle and Transformed by Hope. And it's excellent. And she talks about, in relationship to each struggle, she talks about a gift that emerges from that struggle. Mm-hmm. Now, she can be a little sassy and a little hardcore because she's suffered a lot. All right, so, but she says, this is what she says about powerlessness. Powerlessness brings us face to face with the frustration, somebody mentioned, that comes when life is out of control. When the children, maybe some of you can relate to this, when the children seem to become unmoored from everything we think we've ever taught them, an unexpected illness strikes, which surely, if we haven't been struck one by ourselves, we know somebody who has. The relationship is over. The divorce is final. The money is gone. And, or, the job offer has been withdrawn. So these are all very real life situations, and you could add to that list, okay? So there's something about powerlessness that is deeply frustrating, feels unjust. When we feel that things that we've invested in and have been important fall apart. And so is that loss, so there's loss, does it evaporate and become meaninglessness? Okay. Or might there be the possibility of rebirth of something? One dimension of loss when we lose those things or others, okay, is a sense perhaps of loss of ourselves, especially in midlife and on, moving forward. The way that I used to be in the world as a mother or as a teacher, is changing or is done. It's finished. And so now I need to reinvent myself. No. I mean, there's pain there when things change. There is loss in every change. But is there fertile ground there? And does God have something to offer us there? And how might waiting and trusting open us to that new possibility of grace? And I would say a new expression of grace in our lives. Bless you. Chittister says, the problem is that the self is a product of my own making. It's a little rough here. I shape myself. I shape the self. I myself shape the self. So it is good to have experiences and our attitudes, our efforts, and our accomplishments. All of these things are dimensions of who we are, and they're beautiful. But when they change or they disappear, then what? Okay, then who are we? And I think these times of powerlessness and loss also invite us into this question. You know, who am I now without these things? Who am I in God's eyes? How does God look at me when I'm no longer doing this or I no longer have that? And so the possibility of a new self emerging, again, that God begins to invite us to and open us, and we respond to. How are we doing? Okay. So I would like to share a brief account from my own life of loss, surrender and loss, and, well, actually of loss. And then I would like to offer a time for you to speak with some others about experiences, and I'll have a prompt for you to do that, okay? And this little account is going to move us into one of the responses I think that we are invited to as we wait, which is surrender. Surrender not being a giving up, although there might be a dimension of that, but of radical openness to what we cannot yet see, what might be hidden. Not one thing, okay, but that through trust and that openness we can begin to allow that to come to be in our lives. So here's mine. I was in my mid-30s. In an effort to combine my love of French language and my growing passion for the mountains, I began to spend summers in France in between teaching years. That summer, I enrolled in 8 days of alpine training in the Alps with the French Alpine Club. I was initiated into the worlds of technical rock, snow, and ice. I love the mountains. It was there that I met a French man, Nicolas, Nick. A natural connection unfolded, a shared passion for the mountains and for climbing, a shared language, a depth of spirit and intellect, and a deep enjoyment of other people. It was so inspiring to be with him. Our worlds were far apart, but our connection went deep. With some hesitation, I went back to the States. We followed that connection and moved forward. Our relationship unfolded at a distance over the months, I teaching French in Philadelphia and he working as an engineer in the south of France. We corresponded, chatted, and called. We talked of the future. He came and visited my family. We were soon engaged. He bought a house. It was all moving quite fast. I put in my teaching resignation. Things got bumpy, but the bumps felt like they were going deep, the kind where I began to sense that the dread of things falling apart. What was going wrong? If only the things that were so difficult for me would be less of a struggle. As my brother would say today, that's stupid. I know. He has said that to me today. His point being, I'm heaping something on me that I don't need to heap on me, right? Why aren't I different than I am? Yeah. Okay. Because I want this, and it's a good thing. Right. So, if only. We need to watch out for those. My desolation grew, and his anxiety of a breakup grew, and his pressure on me intensified. Several months later, I broke off the relationship. I struggled with feeling incapable of finding ways to make the relationship better and workable. I felt responsible. My heart was breaking, and my situation seemed a devastation. I had lost everything. A man I loved, our shared passions, the possibility of becoming a mother, building a family together, my job, a home, a life in France. Oh, and how could I pay my next rent? A dream that seemed to come about without my contriving or forcing so quickly seemed to be taken away from me. Okay, we'll get to the surrender. So I think we've kind of fleshed this out a little bit. What does waiting for God look like in a powerless place? I would like to invite you into a time now where you recall an area of your life, present if possible, if not in the past, where you felt powerless, to the extent that you feel comfortable describing that with the people around you. Share that situation. Where does God seem to be in it or not? What part of the prophet's invitation resonates with you? What is waiting looking like? And I haven't talked about surrender yet. I'm going to wait on that, all right? I'll let you take the cue and see what you come up with for surrender, okay? Is the prompt clear?
Yes.
Okay, let's take a good, like a solid 5 minutes. I know that might, I know that sounds short. All right, let's take 10. Sorry, I know, that was the epitome of unrealistic. Okay, let's take 10, 5 to 10. Let's go, how about 8? Jump in, and then I'll gather us together and see, and then we'll take a moment to share and then move into the next phase, okay? All right. I would suggest 3 to 4. Okay, I know that it's never the perfect moment. We could gently reorient towards the larger group. I've learned through my teaching that there's never a perfect moment, and which makes them all okay. Okay, so... And I think we did, I might go over 5 minutes. I'm just FYI, if you need to leave at 9:30, I will be done by 9:35. If you need to leave at 9:30, feel absolutely free to do that. We have coffee break from 10:30 to 10:45. Okay. Is there anything that anyone would like to share in the larger group? I know the dynamic changes. That you feel moved to share, and that might be a blessing for the rest of us. Yes. Would you mind saying your name?
My name's Amy.
Amy.
So, as we were discussing in our group, and I was thinking about my situation and, you know, what goes on in my life, and I was thinking of this torrent of water just circling around and heading down as if like a drain sort of thing. And as we were talking about, make it go up. So it's not a drain, it's not a cesspool, it's not draining down, it's growing up.
Wow.
And Kathy said, like a honeysuckle vine. And if you're a gardener, you know about honeysuckles. They send their little tendrils everywhere, but they bloom and they smell good. And so I turn the cesspool into a vine. And it does the same thing.
And what a powerful inversion of an image. And you know what I love about that? Well, first of all, that it emerged in your discussion, right? But that the rebirth of the image includes all of the dynamics of what was going down. They are totally related and intimately connected. And this is what gives us hope, right? All of the things that have gone down the drain, or feels like they have, or are going, it's not like the blessing and the grace is separated or disconnected from that. It emerges from that place. And God takes it in another direction. I would encourage you, if images have come up like that, to be present to them and to pray with them. Thank you for sharing that with us. Yeah, Becky.
Heather, I'm just so interested. Like, there's some part of me that was asking, like, oh, why are we talking about powerlessness when we're talking about renewal? But in our conversation, it was abundantly clear that we cannot avoid powerlessness. I mean, death was named, and physical anxiety that got out of control, and miscarriage and things, and like, we couldn't avoid those things. And so I think it's really powerful that, like you said earlier, like, we're kind of taught to think we don't have limitation. And so you can just bypass that junk and get to renewal.
Mm-hmm. Get on with the real stuff.
I just love this because you're going to have that powerlessness.
And that's
maybe renewal begins
in
that acknowledgement.
Right. So that notion of, and the temptation is to bypass, right? Because that's what all the messages are telling us, in Western culture, especially, right? Like, get beyond the limitation, or at the very least, snuff it. And what waiting on God invites us into is not that, right? It's not clogging the drain. It's somehow allowing what was going on there to be transformed. And we don't generate that. We open ourselves to that. Yeah.
I love the insight of a sense of powerlessness in losing the loss of self, because I hadn't really thought of that, and then the idea that we create our own image of self. So my sense that I've been struggling with, and feeling a sense of loss of my son as he's married this woman, and the insight...
He didn't marry you. I don't sons marry their mother.
There are many things I admire about her. She's a wonderful mother. I mean, I could go on, but nevertheless, I mean, he married a strong woman, right? And so we... Lockhorns, and I have to be very careful about what I say and how I say it. And so they've only been married for like 3 years, and you know, have been together a few years more. But I love the insight of one of the people I was talking to who said, "Work on being a mother-in-law." So like changing, like I'm not just or only the mother. I am now the mother-in-law, and what does that mean? So I'm going to. Renewing myself.
Amen. And you know what?
That woman.
I know. I'm sure we all have that woman.
Or
that man. I'm struck there by the distinction. And so going back to the drain, so there is, you know, your surrendering. Being a mother to your son. And, I mean, you will always be his mother. But what that looks like is changing now because of the configuration of his life, right? But what is pretty exciting there is that you have a pathway to discover ahead of you and to discover something new of yourself in that, which you haven't discovered. You don't know that about yourself yet. And this is part of the grace.
And if you find out, you can be the bigger one in the relationship by being the kind one, by being the nice one, and then she can see that in you and follow along.
It all sounds so good.
Yes.
Yeah, it does.
I'm not saying this is easy. Okay. It's not easy. But the grace is there for that, and the posture seems to be coming back to this.
But I have to confess that where does God seem to fit into all this? I never even thought about God being
Well, maybe as you open yourself up to the fertile ground there and discover something new about yourself that is possible now that was not possible before, you will learn something of God and God being with you in that.
Gotcha.
All right. Anybody else that has something burning in their heart? Yeah.
I was struck that... something that I felt like you and I had in common of this feeling like we should not complain about a situation that doesn't seem that bad compared to others. That it was, you know, it's a very privileged problem to have, and therefore kind of feeling like it shouldn't be a problem to complain about at all. And that, you know, because there's already so much good and gift within the fact that it's a problem at all, that therefore, like, you shouldn't care that you also have a real sense of powerless or loss associated with having this as opposed to another thing that you maybe used to have or that you thought was possible or that you were hoping for.
Yeah.
And that was interesting for me.
And yet it is.
Mm-hmm.
It is my powerlessness. It is my room for surrender.
Both and.
Yes.
Right?
It's holding on.
Plus, it's a way for God to come in. I mean, if we dismiss it, then we don't leave ourselves open for God to act in our powerlessness.
Yeah.
So I'm hearing a draw beyond a certain world, okay, mm-hmm. and recognizing the gift already that is there to even be having the struggle, mm-hmm. and the struggle is real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We've brought up.
Go ahead, Peggy.
Yeah,
I think a lot of other women in here would identify with me that as you age, aging is about losing things, not only your parents or things like that, but your body doesn't do what it could do at 40. And certainly not at 20. You lose also images of what you thought your life was going to be or how you think it's going to be, and I think that's for any age. Three of us in our group of four were kind of relating to this same idea, but we got into surrender. Because then we started saying, because all of us had done something about the loss, or are planning to do something. So,
and can you just say a little bit more about surrender there and well, how you're responding to the losses?
Well, one person actually used the word surrender, that this is how it is. And there's a part of that, you know. And another person said, you know, I am going to retire, and I've given a date, and I'm going to do this and this and this. And we kind of summarized and said, it's self-care. You're going to... So the idea that you don't just sit there and twiddle your thumbs, that isn't what surrender means, and that's what
right.
Nalin was saying, too. You know,
that's
so,
right.
Anyway.
That's right. Thank you. And let's explore... we do have time to explore the notion of surrender, and I think what we'll do is I have a thought, but let's look at surrender. So does it have your initial reactions to the notion of surrender? Positive, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs up, okay, up. Oh, okay, wow, all right. Let's, I just like to, I love working with images. So that's not me. I don't have a picture of myself falling, although I have, and or any of my climbing partners, because in that moment you're holding the other person's life, so you're not taking a picture of them. But the internet's helpful for that. So one of the reasons why I love to climb, I didn't plan it this way, it just emerged like the thing, most things do. You know, one of the reasons, it teaches me so much, and one of the things it teaches me, and I've been practicing a long time, so I need to keep practicing, is to let go. Somebody said let go. I think this is one of the most powerful gestures in the spiritual life and in the life of God, which is the spiritual life. And so while this looks insane and extreme, I did take an extreme picture, okay? Isn't this what you do when you, right? Isn't this what we're talking about? Okay? So... Joan Chittister. Okay, so here, that is me. So this notion, that's in France. Notice I'm holding on. and so one of the lovely things, like, it's a going, you know, the notion of dance. I mean, moving through life, right, is letting go, and it's also about holding on. And when we let go of one thing that's ending, our hand is open, if we can do that, our hand is open to receive and to move into the new thing that will emerge from that very gesture of surrender. Okay. So, Joan Chittister, she says, surrender is the final act at any point in your life of human openness. It is a radical gesture of openness. To what, right? Well, what you have been talking about in your conversations, what is emerging from the change, the shift. If we continue to hold on, understandably so, to want to hold on to what we know and what has been life-giving, if we continue to do that, our hand is unable, our hearts are unable to receive what is new and to be renewed from also the grief of what was lost. Right? And naming grief is a really important part of this process. Surrender invites us to go beyond the boundaries of the constructed self, like we were saying before, to new unanticipated expressions of who we are. again, we grow into these. They don't happen overnight, or maybe over two nights either. What I, Joan Chittister says, what I do not let into my world now can never stretch my world, can never give it new color, can never fill it with a new kind of air, can never touch the parts of me that I never knew were there. It's kind of like a muscle that you never used, right? When we are in powerlessness and loss and waiting for God there, it's like if we can open ourselves to what we do not see yet, then it's like we start to feel another little muscle there, right, that we didn't know we had. What is left, she says, is the spiritual obligation to accept reality so that the spiritual end can really happen in us. And it is true. There are times to let a thing go and put it down, however unresolved, baffling, wrong, or unjust it may be. Now, again, she uses strong language because she's lost a lot and she has come to places where that surrender is very radical for her, vocationally and in other ways, if you follow her story. So, is there any way you'd like to respond to this notion of surrender from your groups or from some of these notions that I've laid out?
Can you back it up to the quote,
sure. The
first part of the quote?
Yeah.
I'm thinking about working for a supervisor who has such a different understanding of what our work should be about. And the feeling of working under such a supervisor or in a work climate where you can keep fighting and headbutting, or you can surrender, let go, and make the changes that you can as one person, rather than trying to bring a whole institution along that has its own culture, mm-hmm. is freeing.
There's something freeing about that, right? Look at it. And I think you're also touching on an issue of discernment there. When is it time to persevere and work towards something, and when is it not? When is this what the call is? So you might be touching on a discernment issue there.
Discernment feels active to me. It's a constant active thing. I'm constantly letting go of what my expectations
that's
are.
That's a choice, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Surrender is active, yeah.
Surrender to me, especially with this image, it feels like this call of like a complete letting go, which feels very dangerous. This image is a very dangerous image. In the work that I do, I think it's similar to what she was talking about with the big institution. I do work with individuals, but that is about surrendering. But the guidance myself and that I give my clients is you only surrender as much as feels safe in that moment. And holding tight is a natural human thing, and actually something that we should be doing. You know, it's a protection thing. Mm-hmm. It's okay to let yourself hold on to what you need to hold on to, so you can surrender the amount that feels safe, and you will loop around on that to allow for more surrender. It doesn't have to be.
Yeah, that's a great. That's an excellent point. That surrender can be in small increments, and. That's how God works with us. You know, God invites us to what we are able, invites us into gently. And you are absolutely right. And moving, and just going back to the climbing notion, you know, moving over a rock face really is about letting the letting go and then holding on, then letting go and holding on. There are times when the losses are great where we might feel that we're doing that. Or when they're small and we might feel that we're doing that. So, but absolutely, surrender can happen progressively, and it's never forced on us.
Mm-hmm. We discussed some frameworks for prioritization.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this concept of what is surrender, what is control, especially for women, can have many meanings. I think that sometimes I almost surrender myself to use a tool, and finding a framework for prioritization can be a tool. We often are pegged with control, and sometimes when we use a tool like all kinds of tools for prioritizing, it can feel less like a negative loss, mm-hmm. more like a control, even if we're willing to surrender ourselves to using that tool.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like that might be an interesting thing if people are interested in hearing more about that notion of prioritization.
I want to hear more.
I know, I'm just aware of our time. Any other burning comments? Yes.
Well, as I was thinking about this and the final act of human openness, and then Irene, what you were saying about this new relationship you have and how you are. And so I think about also the connection with forgiveness, too, and if it's forgiving ourselves, if it's a surrender, but there's a part of ourselves that needs some forgiveness in there, that can go hand in hand, or forgiving others. Because I recently went through the loss of my father, but through that, I had a relationship with his significant other during the time where it was maybe a little bit similar to what you have with your daughter-in-law. And in the final months when my father was in hospice care, we had to come to a place of surrender in what was happening and forgiveness around how we were with all of one another. For me, felt like that was the final act.
And I would
be very open.
Yeah, and I would say there is the gesture of forgiveness is absolutely full of surrender. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we need to end. I will say I didn't get to the second dimension of my presentation, which doesn't surprise me, which is actually good because you all have weighed in so much in really lovely and powerful ways. In my session on Visio Divina tomorrow afternoon, I will be incorporating in there some of what we didn't get today, not taking away from the practice, but in a way that will make sense. We'll figure it out. I would also like to say a couple of you have asked me about one-to-ones. I know they're full, and I will be posting some additional times. I'm not quite sure when. I have to sit down with the schedule, but I would say they'll be posted by lunchtime today. All right, if you're interested in that. Okay, could we just take a short moment to close together out of silence? Have a wonderful morning and look forward to visiting with you throughout the weekend.